Talk Radio 790 KABC, Peter Tone at 10. Brought to you by Larry Miller and Sit and Sleep. Hi, Larry. We're on for dinner tomorrow. Larry, of course, and Sit and Sleep will beat anyone's advertised price, or your mattress is free. We've got tickets to Stagecoach coming up. When I tell you to call, you'll win tickets to the three-day passes to Stagecoach at the Empire Polo Grounds. And you can't imagine, since I've told you, Dierks Bentley, Jerry Lee Lewis, 38 Special, The Zombies, Willie Nelson, Shania Twain, Kenny Chesney, Travis Tritt, Los Lobos, Winona, and why Kiefer Sutherland's there, I don't know, but he's there. And you can go see him. Three-day passes when we play the news quiz just coming up in a couple of minutes. I'll tell you when to call. My guest right now is Jenny Nordback. She wrote an interesting book. She's a former dominatrix. Her name is Scarlett, is a dominatrix. And the book is called The Scarlet Letters, My Secret Year of Men in an L.A. Dungeon. And I welcome you to the show, Jenny.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
If I may, before we jump into this, Andrew's been holding patiently. He wanted to tell a Don Rickles story. Do you mind?
No, of course.
Have you ever, you won't reveal the celebrities who you've done stuff to, correct?
I won't. But
even if we'll dance around that. We'll see if I can get you to tell anything.
Yeah.
But Andrew, you've been holding so patiently. What was your Don Rickles story?
Well, thank you. And by the way, I have a funny dominatrix parlor story too.
Wow. A twofer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I was working an event at the Century Plaza Hotel for a major Jewish charity, and they were having the 50th anniversary of one of their divisions. I think the Countless Division or something, right?
Right.
So picture this huge Century City ballroom, right? And only like maybe 200 people RSVP'd. So they got like the cheesy 50th anniversary sign hanging up there. And Don Rickles was going to be the keynote speaker.
Yeah.
Now, this was total fiasco. It looked like something out of Saturday Night Live or a commercial, right? So the whole place is just tittering. Like, what's Rickles going to say? This is a total bomb. What's Rickles going to do, right? So you have boring speech after boring speech, boring awards are handed out, blah, 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 commendations, and it's just getting, the tension just mounting and mounting and mounting. So finally, like after 2 hours, they announced Don Rickles, and the place is ready to explode, right? So Rickles comes up to the podium, and in total deadpan says, "This is the highlight of my career." And the whole place just exploded.
Well, because it's Don. I thank you for that, Andrew. By the way, knowing Don Rickles a little bit, I was at a party with somebody who you may have known, maybe you've beaten him with a stick.
It's possible.
And the guy is very wealthy, and his dad lives on another coast and has a hairpiece. And Rickles basically just walked up to him out of nowhere. No setup, nothing, and said, "Your dad's hairpiece is so bad I can hear it through the phone." and then walked. And he said to the wife, "And by the way, if he gets killed, you're a waitress, because there's no money in the West Coast here. The big money's in the East Coast." So,
awesome.
And that's a powerful guy, which gets us to powerful guys. Powerful men, it appears, and you even said it in the book, it appears that is kind of correct, that powerful men, it's kind of a stereotype, are the ones who mostly visit BDSM places because they want to be diminished, and I don't know for what reason, because they like somebody else to control them, because they're controlling all the week, they don't feel deserving.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of stereotypes about the BDSM community, but that is one of the few that I really felt like held true, that like powerful men who are just like mega successful and in these roles where they really don't have to answer to anyone are the first to want to be dominated and powerless and humiliated and made to feel less than. And I always kind of wondered, like, you know, is their successful life a construction of, you know, the fact that they've always had that fantasy and have just been like ashamed of it and worked so hard against it that it's sort of made them successful? Or is it a result of them being successful and then because they're just like always the guy in charge, is it just such a relief to be the one who gets to be, you know, powerless and...
And they give it really give it up. Let's back up for a minute, though, and start with your history. She went to school. You were born overseas, Ireland?
In the U.K.
In the U.K., okay. And then you came over here when you were a girl, and then you went to USC?
I did.
And took what?
I did a really practical degree in archaeology.
You opened an archaeology shop in the valley. Nothing's happened.
Yeah, real-world application there.
So you did that, and what are you doing? You're around 22. I read the book. You had some really bad choices, boy choices, really bad. The one was such an... I hope you're still not in touch with him.
I plead the fifth.
You can't. I'm not your husband, but you can't. You can't be in touch with this guy. He's such a jerk. So you were in that thing where kind of relationship hell... And you're 22, and not everybody 22 goes, "You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to expand my horizons by calling a dungeon and seeing if I can get a job.
I mean, I think a lot of people maybe can't relate to calling a dungeon, but I think they can relate to being 22 and graduating and realizing, you know, you have a degree in something that you're maybe not going to do with your life, and you're $100,000 in student debt.
Wow.
And, you know, so you're like, what am I doing? And you maybe take a job that just sort of pays the bills and make it work. But then you've done what my generation is terrified of, where now you're working an 8-to-5. Like, are you trapped the rest of your life? So I was panicking just as a result of all of that, which made me question my life and my relationships and what I was doing, and realized that, yeah, I'd been in this string of really bad relationships. And some of it was, you know, like you've said, that the guys weren't the best.
He's a jerk, yeah, yeah.
But to some extent, you know, it was my fault too, because I wasn't communicating what I needed, and I hadn't really found my voice and wasn't confident enough to speak up for myself and articulate what it was that I wanted in a relationship or in life. So when I started asking that question, I realized, you know, I think the sort of bedroom aspect was what I focused on initially. Like, what do I really want? And the answer was, like, I think I want something that's a little edgier than what's in the mainstream. And I mean, you have to keep in mind, this is right before 50 Shades of Grey has been written. So that whole cultural thing hadn't happened yet.
Right.
So, you know, BDSM and alternative sexual practices weren't really part of the mainstream conversation at that point. So when I went digging, you know, I found some really strange BDSM Harry Potter fan fiction, and then discovered, you know, a dungeon not 10 miles from where I was living in L.A.
And this was L.A.'s biggest dungeon, is that what it is, or most popular dungeon?
I think that their claim to fame is that they've been here the longest. They've been there since, like, the 80s.
And the dungeon looks, when you say dungeon, people expect rattling chains and rodents and dripping water, I guess, you know what I mean, from the movies.
No,
dungeon.
You do. You picture, like, a dark hole in the ground where you're trapping prisoners, and it's not that at all. It's sort of a fascinating environment. It's kind of adult Disneyland, where each room is constructed with this elaborate level of detail to fit in with a sort of thematic fantasy. So there's, like, a school room, like a classroom, where you can play out, like, schoolgirl fetishes. And there's a medical exam room where, you know, medical fantasies can happen. And it's got an exam table and the eye chart on the wall you know, like, all the different... So, and then, you know, there is a room that looks exactly like a dungeon with chains on the wall. And
so you go marching in there.
Yeah.
Little Jenny comes walking in there, and you apply for a job. Do you sit there? Does a girl give you a clipboard, and you sit down and fill out name, social security number, the whole bit, and they do a background check? And is it like a regular job?
I mean, to some degree, there were the elements like that where it was like, this is too normal. Like, this feels like I'm filling out tax information. But then there's the interview questions themselves get really personal really quickly. You know, it's not the standard, like, it is the standard, what's your job experience? But in this case, the job experience is a little more intense than what you would
expect. It gets real personal. Are you willing to do this to someone? Are you willing to do that to someone?
Well, and, like, you know, have you ever been spanked before? Or, you know, like, trying to understand what's going on in your personal life and what sort of experience you have with BDSM. So,
well, they have to be careful too, that they don't get somebody crazy in there who's out of their mind and weed through, because that destroys their business. So the part of this that struck me as interesting was, after you got hired, I never thought about this. In that world, they then put you through a training program. And the first part of the training program is you have to be submissive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Were you prepared? Did they tell you that during the interview?
They actually, I don't know that they were really clear about that during the interview. It was the phone call afterwards to say, congratulations, you've been hired, but you're starting as a submissive. So I was sort of like, oh, okay, but didn't completely really know what that was going to entail. And I mean, it is the best learning path in.
What does that mean? You show up your first day at work, just bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and somebody ties you to something and starts smacking you around? I mean, what is that? And is it a customer?
Yeah, it's a client.
Really?
Yeah, so...
And is it like IHOP, where there's a woman standing next to you and she's a trainee, so you're going to beat me first, and then you're going to beat her lightly, because we want you to see how this... and they take you through that, like somebody shadows you?
You're sort of mentored by someone initially, where they kind of talk you through what, because they put you in with regulars first, so they know what to expect from them.
Did they get a discount because you're a newbie?
No, I don't know that they told him that I was a newbie, but that should be a thing. So they kind of shadow you through the interview process and, like, know what questions to ask and boundaries to set and just make sure everyone is clear and comfortable. But then once you go into the actual session, you're on your own. You just get kind of chucked off the deep end. And my first session was, you know, the tying me up description was accurate, but he was actually into tickling, which I...
Tickling you?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Had not occurred to me anyone was... into that prior to that moment. So it was kind of a
And was it shocking. Pleasant or was it, I want this guy dead? I mean, somebody tickles me for 12 seconds and I'm, okay, it's over. We're done.
You know, what I found was the hardest part of tickling sessions was that most guys who are into tickling aren't very good at it. So it's not that they're tickling you and that it's unpleasant. It's that you have to pretend that they're tickling you. So you're like shrieking with fake laughter squirming and faking it. And it's
I can't. This is so bizarre to
difficult.
Me. Bizarre to me. By the way, I'm talking to Jenny Nordback, who was Scarlet. The book is The Scarlet Letters, My Secret Year of Men in an L.A. Dungeon. So you go through the training. So you're submissive. Then there's three steps, as I recall from the book.
You can be a submissive, a switch, or a dominant.
And switch is what at that
switch
point?
Switch goes both ways. So a switch can take submissive sessions or dominant sessions. They could conceivably flip within a session.
By the way, I should mention, too, the phone number, 800-222-5222. If you got a question for Jenny, we're not doing the contest yet. We'll do it in a little bit. But if you got a question, 800-222-5222. Or if you've always wanted to go to a dungeon or and find out what the experience is like.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can give you that sense, but you can ask that question too. So then you went to the second phase of that, and then all of a sudden you're on your own. You're doing your thing.
Yeah, so, I mean, I did my time as a submissive and kind of learned the mindset and what it feels like to encounter those implements and, you know, just kind of...
When I'm paying to do something to you because you're the submissive, do you get to do a safe word even though I'm paying?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you can stop it at any time even though I'm paying.
Yeah.
And then what happens? We're halfway through a session. You've stopped it, but I've paid.
I mean, ideally, you've negotiated the scene well enough ahead of time that you shouldn't really have to stop it. So we've been really clear about exactly what you can and can't do and how far you're allowed to push things and how hard
you can do
it.
I got to tell you, one of the first experiences you talk about in the book is a guy who, for some reason, and you attribute it to childhood, that something happened in childhood that was an arousal before you even know what sex is and an arousal. And the guy likes to have you pin him between your thighs. Almost to the point where you can't breathe. And I remember you saying you could feel his tears dripping on your thigh. And I'm thinking, really? Really? He's crying. The man is crying. And then when you let him go, he said, that was terrific. Let's do exactly that again.
Yeah.
So you sat on him. You were smothering this guy. And he finally tapped out.
Yeah.
But said to you, this was terrific. I can't even imagine. You're suffocating a guy, basically.
That was his fantasy. And, I mean, that, for him, was one where it got really muddled up with, like you said, it was when he was a child on the playground, a girl had sort of sat on him and made him feel like he was going to die, and he was being smothered. And somehow, when he went through puberty, that got crossed in his mind.
Stuck.
And that was what he fixated on. So that was what he needed to get off. And, yeah, he wanted to play out this, like, smothering, powerless.
So is that a guy that then comes back to you every 3 weeks and is a regular and wants the same exact thing done? Are they stuck right that's what he wants exactly?
Men are fascinating. I don't think women fixate in the same way that men do. It's down to, like, the same exact wording and the color of your toenail polish and how you're wearing your hair, and they need to, like, replicate the exact same scene over and over and over again. And some of these guys have been doing it since, like, the 80s.
It's
like
Groundhog Day.
Yeah, over and over and over again.
Wow. And were there guys you hated to see but you couldn't bag out, or couldn't you tap out and say to somebody else in the place, you got to handle this guy, this is too much for me?
Never had to take a session you weren't comfortable with or didn't want to do. I think sometimes I took sessions I probably shouldn't have just because it felt like a challenge or it was something new and interesting, and I would get kind of midway through it and be like, this was a terrible decision. But especially as a submissive, you know, it was
As you're talking to me, I see you got an attitude where I could almost see that if I was with you, there's a part of you that's like, this is kind of, let me see what this is about. You look like somebody who likes to explore.
Yeah, no question.
And don't get bored easily because you did a lot of stuff there. The other thing that's fascinating to me is that somebody comes in and books a session first time, and you sit with them for a long time to make sure you know exactly, there's no airspace between what he wants and what you're going to give him, because there's a problem if there's a disconnect, right?
Yeah, so it's hard because you've got a few minutes in a room where, you know, you're trying to kind of tease out someone's deep, dark fantasies that they've potentially never spoken about openly before. So, you know, you're kind of trying to get that out of them at the same time establishing exactly what you're going to be doing in the scene and what boundaries you need to set and the sort of feel of the fantasy. So, you know, it can be anything from angry to overpowering to humiliation.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, you said
it can be almost kind of nurturing sometimes. So getting just the wrong tone to something
gets people
completely
ticked off.
Ruin the scene.
Yeah, you said, I think you laughed once and the guy got freaked out because he didn't want laughing during his session.
Or one of my examples is I had a puppy play client. So a guy who wants to pretend to be a dog, and he came in and, you know, said like, I want you to be my dog trainer, and we're in the sort of dog championships, and I'm going to do my tricks and whatever. So I was like, okay, at that point, that was like, I know what to do with this. I'm not going to get too into the weeds of the details. Like, I can figure this out as we go through the session. It was a mistake because it was critical to him that he was always a good dog. Like, he couldn't ever be a bad dog. So I heard trainer and thought, all right, I need to kind of correct him for something at some point. So you know, we get a few minutes into the session and I go, bad dog. And he just like melted down. He started crying. He wet his pants. It was horrible. So.
And does he pay or does he ask for a refund?
I never had anyone ask for a refund.
Well, I guess when you're dominatrix, you go, no, you're paying. And that's the end of it. Right?
Yeah. I mean, I think most of the time you find a way to work through it. But that one I felt bad because it was like, if I had just taken the extra few minutes to really understand his fantasy, I would have known he never, ever wants to be a bad dog.
So we're going to take a brief break. We're going to be back with Jenny Nordback, former dominatrix named Scarlett. And the book is The Scarlet Letters. Her book is about my secret year of men in an L.A. dungeon. We come back, I want you to talk about the A-list.
Yeah.
There's one in particular, A-list star, who you said is as big as can be.
Yep.
And he demanded something strange. Also want to talk about the sexual part of this, the monetary part of this, and what people ask for the most. I'm curious of the depth and the breadth of what they ask for, what people ask for. I'm one of those guys who didn't get stuck with, I have enough on my hands having like just regular sex that I can't believe, I'm so happy that I'm just having sex.
That's how I feel these days. We have an 18-month-old and I'm like, let's just
have sex.
Yeah.
Just, I'm so happy. I'm so appreciative that I can't make demands. And I don't know, the beating thing, I don't get. Also the dressing up. You have to buy your outfits. What's going on? We'll talk more about the book. 800-222-5222 is the phone number. Peter Tilden at 10 continues right after this. Talk Radio 790-KABC. Peter Tilden at 10 continues right now. Hour number two. And with Jenny Nordback. Jenny is a former dominatrix named Scarlett. She's author of The Scarlet Letters, My Secret Year of Men in an L.A. Dungeon. And the book is out now. It just came out. And it's available on Amazon and bookstores everywhere, correct? What's the matter? You can't hear yourself?
Oh, there we go. Yes. Yeah, it came out on Tuesday, finally.
Congratulations. How long have you been working on the book?
It took me about a year to finish it, but the way publishing works, it's been finished for about a year, so I've just been kind of waiting for it to come out.
Wow. You know, I can hear people saying, well, what about her family? What about her husband and kid? How do you break that news to a guy you're dating that you're eventually going to marry that, oh, by the way, if you look in the closet, you're going to see a lot of things that cinch my waist to nothing and high heels and whips and stuff. I'm a dominatrix.
I mean, I think it helped that by the time I was telling my now husband, I wasn't doing it professionally anymore. So it was I was a dominatrix, but I think
I would still 20 years into the marriage, I'd still be asking questions. How come? Why? Did you touch it? Did you look at it? What did he do? Did he mount you? Did he not? It'd be horrific.
Yeah. I realized, especially with him, like that I had intense feelings early on in the, you know, like first couple of dates was like, this guy is special. And then it was like, I have to tell him immediately because I can't get 6 months or a year in and be like, oh, did I not mention I used to be a dominatrix? I'm sure that came up in conversation at some point. So,
and the parents?
I mean, my mom is through there right now.
So she knows. Well, now it's over,
mom,
isn't it?
I'm glad you know now. I think I didn't tell my family while I was doing it. I was lying to them for a long time, and that was exhausting. But once I'd stopped doing it, I don't know, I just got to this place where it was like, I'm not ashamed of anything I've done. I know I want to write about it, so I better just, you know, bite the bullet and open up. And I think, especially with my parents, and now being a parent myself, I can see it so much more clearly that we sort of forget that our parents were people before we came along, that they have their own stories and pasts. And
let's get your mom in here and get her to reveal some stuff. Right? Hey, Mom, come on. It's time to open. Next hour, Mom opens up for you.
So, I mean, she was incredibly supportive, and I was so scared, like terrified the entire time I was doing it that she was going to find out. And then when I finally did tell her, she just took it in stride, and it was like, you know, she was proud of me for just being me and still loved me, and it was okay. So I think I probably didn't give, especially my mom, enough credit.
Well, there you go. Mom, she loves you, and thank you very much for being that supportive. Look at her.
Yeah.
But she knows that. Also, I just got Hannah's. You're doing this thing for the release, this party, huge party. Celebrate the release of The Scarlet Letters. What is it, this masquerade ball?
We are doing a masquerade ball book launch party in Hollywood tomorrow night at Bordner's, which is an awesome old Hollywood dive bar that's just, like, such a cool space. So we've got, like, burlesque dancers and some, like, bondage performance art, and I'll be there signing books and dancing.
And anybody
and
can come?
Yeah, anyone can come.
And this is the address, 1652 North Cherokee Avenue.
You just have to go online to, the tickets are on Eventbrite. And I think,
say it again.
Eventbrite.
Okay, Eventbrite.
Yeah.
So go on there and get your tickets.
Yeah, if you just search Scarlet Letters Masquerade, you'll find it.
And it's tomorrow night at what time?
It is tomorrow night from 6 to 10 at Bordner's in Hollywood.
And if I come, am I going to be bound and gagged, or is it nothing against your will?
Do you want to be bound?
Not really. No, thank you.
Then I won't.
I don't even want to be sitting in traffic. But
yeah. No, I mean, I think we're going to have some people there who can do some sort of demonstrations and talk to you about rope and whatever, and they'll be showing off on stage and dancing. And
go for it.
So if you're curious, come check it out. The stock room will be there with, like, implements, and they're doing raffle prizes and stuff. So
I could win something to beat myself with.
Yeah.
All right. So we promised we'd talk about A-list stars. There's one A-lister. You didn't mention the name. Do they sign? Do they have to sign? Do you have to sign and they sign a non-disclosed?
No,
nobody?
Everyone is shocked by that. And I'm honestly kind of shocked by it now, a little bit older, you know, with, like, I understand what was at stake for these people.
If you come out and talk about so-and-so doing whatever, I'm shocked. I am shocked that, I guess, is there a code?
I mean, I think, you just sort of, there's trust between you and the client, but you really, I mean, how well do you know these people? And, you know, they're sort of trusting my integrity, which it turns out I have, and I'm not going to out
them. Damn you. It makes the interview worse. I'd love to hear names. So one of the big A-list, you said this person is a top A-list star. Mm-hmm. Everybody would know who it is. You even mentioned, you said, every woman would want to sleep with him. Even a lot of guys would want to sleep with him.
Have probably fantasized, yeah.
So he comes in, and you're doing, I remember you said he was wearing sunglasses, which drove you nuts, and chewing gum.
Yeah, he came in for the interview and wouldn't take his sunglasses off. And it's pretty dark in the interview lobby space. It's this kind of romantic, gothic, dark, candlelit vibe. So having your sunglasses on is absurd. It's not even just, like, normal fluorescent light absurd that you have your sunglasses on. So, and on some level, it was like, I'm not going to recognize you because you have your sunglasses on, really? Like, seriously, guys? So on top of that, he's smacking his gum the whole time. And then just really not cooperating in the interview. Like, not giving me, you know, I'm kind of trying to be like, okay, so why are you here today? What can I do for you? And he's like, I want you to dominate me. And I was like, okay, there's, you know,
big area.
At least 6 million ways I can do that. It bears noting, I have a friend who worked at the dungeon with me who, when guys did that kind of stuff, would say, like, oh, whatever you want to do, we can do. She would tie their toes apart and give them paper cuts between each of them.
Oh, man.
And they never, ever did that again.
She would tie their toes apart and do paper cuts.
Yep.
Man.
So I'm not that sadistic.
That's brutal. But this guy
is just not giving me anything to go off of. So I'm kind of sitting there questioning, like, what is his motive? Is he, like, here researching a part and he just doesn't really want to be here, doesn't know what to ask for and is kind of uncomfortable? Or is he, like, does he think he's here for sex because sex wasn't allowed at the dungeon. So, you know, I'm like, does he think he's going to get stuff that's not allowed? Like, what is, I just couldn't figure it out. And the gum chewing was driving me insane.
But then he dropped trail.
Yes.
And you saw what he was there for.
Well, I mean, I sort of saw what he was there for. He had a Prince Albert piercing, which is, it goes sort of through, I don't, can I say
does it go
penis?
Through, yeah, well, if we're talking clinically, it goes through, you know, we use the medical term,
yes,
Schwanstucker, usually, okay, Nicky Nacks and Schwanstucker, but so it goes through the Schwanstucker.
Yes.
And there's a chance, like, you can attach it to stuff and lead him around by the
thing. Yeah, so his in particular, what? I could recognize the piercing was the kind that is sort of designed
for that.
That you can attach a leash,
wow,
to it. So I was like, oh,
wow,
this guy is.
This is an A-list movie. Star. A-list star movie, yeah. In a movie now? In the last year, big movie.
I feel like.
You're not even going to say that.
People are going to slowly piece together things that I've said. So
I'm looking at any star that chews gum. But all right, so he has this thing and he wants it attached to a leash.
Yeah. So he wants it attached, wow, to the leash, and then it kind of spirals from there.
And loved it, and it was a turn on, and
yeah, and I mean, he was ridiculously good looking, so it was kind of distracting for me. Like, I mean, getting attracted to your clients is not ideal because
but he's a movie star, yeah, big time movie star. Do you ever stay in touch? Do clients try and stay in touch with you since there's a no sex rule at a dungeon? And you're attractive, and you've done something very intimate, and you found out something about me that not a lot of people know, and that takes a comfort level. Is there, after the fact, hey, can I get your number? Because I want to stay in touch with you, because now we've gone to that level.
Yeah,
that now
definitely.
I'd like to see you, you know,
my
secrets.
Yeah, I mean, it is really intimate, and you connect. And, I mean, sometimes that is mutual, and, you know, as a professional, you feel it as well. And there were times like that where it was kind of tempting to be like, yeah, you know, we can hang out afterwards, but it wasn't a line I ever really muddled.
You said you do stay in touch with a couple, yes?
Yeah, there's a few that sort of started as clients and then saw out at, like, parties and in the BDSM community and at events and that kind of stuff. So kept in touch with them that way, but never, like, I didn't date any of my clients.
Gotcha.
That always seemed
any awkward, your El Cholo having dinner with the girls or something, and then all, or having your grandmother's anniversary or birthday, and all of a sudden you go to the next table is the guy that you pulled around by his how do you do?
Well, so I actually pointed this out in the book that, you know, we're in LA, and what are the odds of running into someone? They're minuscule, but of course the universe has a sense of humor. So it's, I feel like almost every woman that worked at the dungeon has a story of running into a client somewhere. One of them, it was at a baby shower. I think that's my favorite. Mine, unfortunately, was a client I did not. It was like my worst client experience. And I ran into him at my day job where no one knew what I was doing. So I was terrified he was going to out me, but it was sort of mutually assured destruction. Like, if he outed me, then how did he know? And so he didn't out me. But it, yeah, mine was not. It couldn't be, you know, Mr. A-list smoking hot.
Yeah, it has to be the
run
guy
into
that you
at the
detest.
Bar. And yeah, it has to be my, like, horrible client.
By the way, the guy that you detest, do you hit him harder?
Unfortunately, he didn't want to be hit, so I did not get to hit him and take that out on him. But that was always a tough one, too, because guys would try to sort of instigate you and, like, deliberately piss you off to get you to, like, step the session up. So then if you responded to that and did actually hit them harder or get angry or whatever, then you were kind of giving in to them. It's like dealing with a toddler.
So they're controlling you.
Yeah. So you would have to kind of find ways to work around that. And the psychology of it was just so complicated.
Here. I'm talking to Jenny Nordback. The book is The Scarlet Letters, My Secret Year of Men in an L.A. Dungeon. Just came out, and you can get it online at Amazon bookstores everywhere, correct?
Yeah, Barnes & Noble.
And the Masquerade Ball is Saturday, April 8th, tomorrow, 6 to 10, at Bordner's. On Cherokee Avenue, 1652. And you can go to scarletletters.com and look it up. That's the best way again?
You can go to, well, I mean, you can find me on social media, and it's on any of those sites. So on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, I'm Jenny Nordback. And you can search on Eventbrite for the Scarlet
and
Letters Masquerade.
Right, got it. I'm curious, with a dungeon like that, what's the mix between men and women? Is it primarily men who are paying? Small bunch of women to come in, couples to come in?
Yeah, so it's mostly men, like huge majority men. But it was fascinating. We did get women who would come in on their own, and then we got a lot of couples coming in, often more to get like lessons. You know, they wanted to integrate something edgier, more exciting into the bedroom, but didn't know how to go about it. Or one of them knew they wanted to be dominated. So like, especially after like 50 Shades, So the woman is like, I want him to, you know, be this character and dom me, but he's not naturally dominant. He doesn't know how to do it. So we would kind of work with them on how to bring that into their own lives.
So like you're a counselor.
Yeah. I mean, so much of that work felt more like therapy than anything else.
It sounds like it when you're saying it right now. What's the, so quickly, because we only got moments. The biggest fetish, the biggest ask, is it foot stuff?
I feel like one in three people is my best estimate are in some way attracted to some element of feet.
And what, they want to be stepped on? They want to suck your toe? What do they want to do?
The range is fascinating. It's anything from like some people like clean, perfectly manicured feet, some like stinky feet, some like dirty feet, like muddy feet.
No.
Squishing food with your toes, dangling a shoe off of your foot is its own fetish.
And this gets somebody to completion? I mean, they actually, really?
Yeah.
You step on a salami sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
And are they specific about what kind of salami in the sandwich or what kind of bread?
Or it's like cherry tomatoes with purple toenail polish. Or, that's
so you're going shopping. Half your day is spent shopping for the sessions.
Or, you know, they're coming prepared with exactly what they want.
With the shopping list, the clothing.
Yeah.
What's with the latex? Doesn't anybody just wear normals like overalls or coveralls?
That was a thing for me where I was like, can I not be into this and not have to be in like leather and latex all the time? Like, I want to wear a pair of jeans. And for some reason, I mean, it is sort of, you step into this persona when you're clad in leather or, you know, wearing a latex dress and it looks kind of cool and, you know, it's lubed up and slippery and exciting. So I get it. But yeah, a certain point, you're like, can I just wear flats and a pair of jeans? And I promise I can still kick your ass.
Well, I laughed. Like, you said you changed from your big stilettos into the lower stilettos to go to work. So you have all these shoes in a locker.
Yeah.
And is it very competitive? When I walk into the place and I'm sitting in the lobby waiting to get dominated, do they bring out a lineup of women? They do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, unless you've already picked beforehand, you've looked online, you've decided who fits your fetish and, you know, you've booked an appointment with someone specific. If you just walk in, then, you'll get whoever the 4 or 6 or whatever number of available women who are dominant or submissive.
And are you competing with the other women? Is there a thing?
I mean, there is to a degree. It's a little bit competitive because you're competing for clients. But it was shockingly not catty. It was the most supportive female environment I've ever been a part of. Just like very empowering and uplifting. And
look at that. Incredible. Look, I can't believe we're out of time.
Oh,
that flew. The book is really well written. It's really interesting.
Thank you.
It really gives you a lot of insight into what people are asking for behind closed doors and why powerful guys need to be dominated. It's a really well written book. And
thank you.
It was a fun read. The Scarlet Letters, My Secret Year of Men in an LA Dungeon by Jenny Nordback. You can look her up. And if you want to go to the Masquerade Ball, man, it is tomorrow night. It sounds like a blast. Saturday, April the 8th at Bordner's. At 1652 North Cherokee, but look that up online and get your okay ahead of time. I guess it's limited, not a giant place, but it's limited.
Yeah, no, you just have to get your tickets ahead of time.
So there, and she'll have the book and sign the book there for you too, and you can get in on this magic. And right now, you can call 800-222-5222, and I'll give you a chance to win tickets to Stagecoach, the Country Music Festival, with Chesney and Bentley and Shania Twain and more. 3-day passes to the Stagecoach at the Empire Polo Grounds, the 28th, 29th, and 30th. If you call right now, 800-222-5222, we'll play the news quiz next.
Right now, during Spring Black Friday, let the home.
Talk Radio 790 KABC. That's a killer, Jerry Lee Lewis. He is going to be at Stagecoach, along with the Zombies and Willie Nelson and Shania Twain and Dirk Bentley and Kenny Chesney. And Travis Tritt and Cyndi Lauper and Les Lobos and more. And you could be too. Let's see. Let's go to the phones and take Rob in Irvine. You're on Talk Radio 790 KBC. Good morning.
How you doing, Peter?
I'm doing all right. What do you do, Rob?
Good, thanks. Oh, I'm just on a day off of work today. Work in the legal field.
Oh, okay. Well, hopefully you're either suing people or helping people out. You ready to do the quiz?
Yeah, let's do it.
So there's true and false, and there's multiple choice. And as I say every day, listen to me carefully. Ready? In her first post-election interview, Hillary Clinton said that misogyny played a role in her 2016 election loss. Is that true or is it false? True or false?
I say true.
Yeah, she said she spent a lot of time wrestling with the fact that 53% of white women voted for Trump and the impact of her gender on her loss. Twitter recently said that the Trump administration attempted to pressure them into what? Twitter said the Trump administration attempted to pressure them into A, giving Trump a special presidential account, B, getting them to reveal the identity of an anonymous account that has been critical of U.S. Customs and Border Protection, or C, automatically retweeting everything Trump says? Was it A, a special account, B, revealing an identity, or C, automatically retweeting?
B.
You got it. Very good. Filed a lawsuit against the Trump administration on Thursday alleging that U.S. Customs and Border Protection officials had tried to get the company to reveal the identity of an anonymous source. Let's see here. April the giraffe will have her new baby, A, someday, B, never, C, who cares? Is it A, someday, B, never, or C, who cares?
B, never.
No, it's actually someday. April the giraffe's handlers at the Animal Adventure Park in New York on Thursday reported a significant change in April's shape. They said April's body belly is much less bald and her bulges have streamlined, so maybe someday she can have a baby. That's a big, big story. NASA will destroy a $3.26 billion Saturn probe this summer to protect an alien water world. Is that true? They're going to destroy a $3-plus billion Saturn probe this summer to protect an alien water world. Is that true or false?
False.
No, it's true. It's actually true. For nearly three decades, researchers have worked to design, build, launch, and operate an unprecedented mission to explore Saturn. In 1977, fell into orbit around the gas giant and has been documenting the planet, and they decided they're going to destroy the sucker. Kendall Jenner, we talked about this the other day. Kendall Jenner's new ad for this is causing a stir among Black Lives Matter supporters and others. A big pushback on the internet. Was it A, Pepsi, B, Apple, or C, McDonald's? A, Pepsi, B, Apple, or C, McDonald's.
Pepsi.
It's Pepsi. The YouTube ad opens with her posing for a photo shoot near a kind of generic protest. She opts in, pulls off her wig, joins the masses, gives a Pepsi to a police officer who drinks it while everyone else cheers.
I like that.
She saves the day. You know what? You, my friend, did well enough to go to Stagecoach. You're going for 3 days to the Empire. Yeah, Empire Polo Grounds. You're going to see all these great acts. The biggest party of the year, Dierks Bentley, Shania Twain, Kenny Chesney. So stay in the line. Dino will get you your tickets. And I will sit here and wait patiently for Dr. Drew to crosstalk on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Imagine a store that lets you get...
Good news for you. More taxes. More taxes for you, my friend.
Dude, you
need to pay your fair share, man. You're not paying.
I know. You know, I felt that. When I was doing my taxes here, I said to my wife, honey, I just don't think we're paying enough.
Yeah, we need to really do something about that.
Let's amp it up, because they're responsible with our money. I'm sure they're looking out for
it. Look what they've done with the roads.
And it's
the roads are great.
You know what's amazing to me?
What's
that
amazing?
They pushed the can down the road, literally the roads, for this long. And then what happened to all the other money that was supposed to be spent for the last 30 years on the roads?
Oh, please. Don't even.
Did we not go through this before? No accountability?
And I think I mentioned to you yesterday that there was an article I saw hidden deep in the pages of the LA Times that something like 56% or something of the tax revenue comes from the wealthy. And guess what? They've taxed them now to the point where it's not worth working. So they're stopping working, so those tax revenues are dropping. So good times. It's cheaper not to work.
And by the way,
it's not
worth
working.
I think I want to pay my fair share. I want to do that, and I want to donate to charity and all this. But I also want some transparency as far as where my money is going.
Because
we've had 30 years of being told this money is going to that.
I know.
How about yanking it from the high-speed rail to fix the roads? Wouldn't that be great?
What a crazy
non-existent high-speed rail that will never happen.
Yeah.
That's a lie to begin with. Mm. And it's billions of dollars, but, I tell you?
I don't even want to think about that because I get very angry when I do. But then, look, we've chased out a few businesses. Toyota's not here. You know why there's no celebrity Grand Prix of Toyota this year? Because Toyota's not here. They don't want to pay for it.
So it's a celebrity Grand Prix.
There's no celebrity Grand Prix.
Oshkosh, where they
I don't know what they're doing. They're just not in this state. So anyway, what I've got coming up, I've got Carl Higbee. He's a former Navy SEAL. Going to give us a little military strategy. I've got some questions for him. I heard a military strategist yesterday tell me that perhaps that gas attack was not Assad. It was one of his generals trying to make Assad look bad. So when they accelerate him being pushed out, they can jump in. Interesting, right?
Interesting there. And Ron Paul has a take on it that he said it wasn't them. It wasn't even Syria. I mean, so
who knows?
I've
got another a chief security officer at Stratfor, Fred Burton. The Stockholm attack, we're going to talk about that. We're going to cycle back again on the Syrian situation. And let's see, I've got Alex Katahakis and I've got Jim Roop coming in to talk about the road repairs. Big story. And I've got a sorority girl who is accused of faking cancer to scam parents and friends on a sort of a Kickstarter campaign.
Wow.
She is a wheelchair, shaved her head. And that's
she
what
went,
we call.
She did the full commitment. She went
full,
all in.
Full Monty. And that's Munchausen by
so now she'll now. So now she does the Kickstarter for Munchausen.
In from
yeah, prison, from of prison, course, but it's still the, hey,
yeah.
I have Munchausen's, kick in.
I need help with my treatment.
Jeez. Wow. Whenever she ends up being diagnosed as, she can then do a Kickstarter for that, too.
Sure, why not?